If you've been sitting through this entire session, I think you're getting the impression that we had a pretty good team. And so my contribution to this session is to kind of take a critical look at our team and try to dissect why our team was so effective. So that's what I'm going to do. And, you know, I'll preface this with this. You know, I'm not a social scientist. I'm not a psychologist. This is a little outside my comfort zone, but I've been very intrigued watching our team interact and do their thing. And so these are kind of my perceptions of of how it all worked. So let me give you just a quick overview and try to present some evidence that we were actually a productive project and an effective team. And I'm going to give you some of my kind of initial thoughts about how that occurred, right? Just me thinking about it. And then kind of see how that jives with what the literature says about effective teams, because there's actually been quite a bit of research that's analyzed teams to see what makes them effective. And then wrap it up with some conclusions and some ideas moving forward for building effective teams. So, you know, a lot of this has already been stated. This is a NIFA CAP project. We collectively call ourselves PZM for short. So I'm going to say PZM a bit throughout this. We had 9 co-PDs, 9 grad students, 1 postdoc, and a whole host of technicians as part of this team. So we're a relatively large team, right? A lot of folks. And we were actually spread across 7 institutions. And again, the core of the project was this field experiment that was replicated across 4 sites. So that's all I want to say about the project per se. So I would argue we were an effective team. And I guess I'll let you be the judge of that. There's lots of ways to quantify effectiveness. We could look at products, we could look at outcomes, we can look at training. Ultimately, impact is probably the biggest measure of effectiveness, so that's, you know, that's to be determined, but we can at least look at these first two. So what do we do? We've got 4 field experiments that serve as foundations for continuing spatially replicated long-term research. So this project, these field experiments are ongoing, even if some of our core data collection is finished. We have 12 papers published out of this project. I think about 50% of those were led by Alan. And we have a whole bunch more in the pipeline, in addition to the ones I have listed here. And a lot of that research that's been published is, I would argue, really pushing the envelope of science, which, you know, I think is something we all want to do. We train 9 grad students and a postdoc in agriculture science. And we have 4 new proposals aimed at scaling up and expanding this research and the outreach components of this research that have been submitted. Maybe not all funded, but submitted. So, based on these metrics, I think you could argue that we were effective. We were an effective team. We accomplished our research objectives, certainly. We were productive. We trained excellent students. And we apparently enjoyed the whole process enough to want to keep doing it, right, as evidenced by these 4 proposals that have gone in. And I think there's more in the works as well. So we want to keep doing it. We're having fun. So what made our team effective? So again, these are my initial perceptions. This is kind of what I came up with before really looking at the literature about team effectiveness. So, you know, we had really strong leadership for this team. And, you know, they were really effective at fostering a creative and synergistic dynamic. I mean, that's been really apparent to me. They define clear team goals, really good about soliciting opinions and input from all the members of the team. This really helped to foster this environment of collegiality, and democratic decision-making was the norm, right? We all kind of decided what needed to be done and how. This was enhanced, I believe, by really regular communication. So our team engaged in monthly phone meetings. We had annual team meetings at one of, we rotated across the sites. So every year we were at one of the other sites for a two-day-long team meeting. I think, you know, all of this fostered cohesiveness and engagement among the team members, helped clarify goals and procedures. Initially, our first meetings were a lot about protocol development and really figuring out which metrics, which measurements we needed to make to really, you know, accomplish our goals and test the hypotheses that we were actively trying to clarify during these initial meetings. And, you know, we have a paper that kind of spells that process out. We use structural equation modeling as a way to kind of help us think about the project and what measurements needed to be made to answer our questions. You know, and all of this really facilitated the completion of tasks, right? So we got things done because we talked about it. We communicated about it. Our annual meetings were more like science workshops. I mean, they're really fun events. We have one scheduled right after this meeting is over for 2 days. We're just going to stay here and have our final meeting. And we utilized online software to really facilitate a lot of our communication and storage of project materials and protocols and data. And that software was Basecamp. Here's just some screenshots. We utilized this software to talk amongst ourselves and to create small groups of discussions. And one of the really nice things about it is it now serves as a chronicle of the life of our project across literally thousands of messages and posts. I've tried to go through there to figure out exactly how many posts. It's several thousand posts. And, you know, it's really kind of like a Facebook for our project in a way. Anyway, I think this really helped a lot as well. And then among the participants, I think there was an unusually high level of commitment. You know, I've been on other projects where the commitment is not as high as we had for this project. Most folks made time for quality interactions. They did what they said they were going to do. And, yeah, we had disagreements, right? A lot of time those disagreements were around specific approaches to measuring particular variables. But when those occurred, they were all very collegial, and we, you know, figured it out and we moved on, and it was good. Then we had these outstanding graduate students that really helped to expand the scope of the research, and they participated in the monthly and the annual meetings. They initiated subgroup meetings amongst themselves. They had these virtual lab meetings. And then a number of them were awarded NSF and NIFA fellowships, which was really critical because this freed up some funds to bring on additional personnel, including an exceptional postdoc, Alwyn Williams, who really, I think, was critical to synthesizing across, you know, what would otherwise be some kind of discipline-specific data set. So he really served as bridges across the different labs, really, really brought the project together, had the skill set and the vision to really be able to see those big picture synthesis-type questions that we could answer, excellent communication skills, very strong quantitative skills. Postdocs are motivated to be really productive, and Alwyn really was productive, as you could see from the list of publications, and, you know, was a finisher, really saw these projects through to completion. So I think having somebody like that on the team is really, really a boon. So those were my initial perceptions. Then I decided, you know what, I should probably look at the literature on effective teams and see, you know, how that jives. And so there's a long literature on effective teams. You know, folks have been looking at this and trying to figure out what makes teams click for a while. And, you know, I think the initial thoughts were that team effectiveness is enabled by the kind of structural features of the team. So things like having a clear task, team composition, so the skill set of the team members, having adequate information and resources available to the team, and then, you know, some sort of rewards that, that kind of benefit each team member to remain in that team and have a functioning team. And those make sense, and I think a lot of those were in place in our project. But the more recent research has really narrowed in on the critical role of communication. And specifically this idea that really emerged from the literature I was looking at, this idea of psychological safety, right? And so psychological safety is a shared belief held by members of a team that the team is a safe place for interpersonal risk-taking. So this research by Edmondson came out of, you know, work looking at 51 work teams. They basically concluded that psychological safety influences learning behavior within the team, which ultimately influences team performance. Woolley et al. Measured what's known as collective intelligence. So collective intelligence is the ability of a group to perform a wide variety of tasks. So this work was based on looking at 192 teams, and then they tried to look at variables that correlated with this collective intelligence. Interestingly, what they found was that collective intelligence was not strongly correlated with the individual intelligence of the team members. Right? So that means that collective intelligence is this synergistic property that arises from the team. Right? So collective intelligence is synergy. What they did find was that the strongest correlates with this collective intelligence were two things: equality in communication among the team members, so the degree to which each team member contributed equally to the kind of total communication happening within the team, and then the average social sensitivity of the members in the team, so the degree to which the members could kind of pick up on the cues of other team members. Right, and that is basically this psychological safety. Right, so psychological safety is basically collective intelligence, right, or drives collective intelligence, which we've already established is team synergy. This work also pointed to a third variable, which was the proportion of females in the team as well. And then additional studies, there's been a host of studies, additional studies looking at all kinds of different teams using all different kinds of approaches, and they basically support these same ideas, right? That communication is key, right? The psychological safety that drives synergy based on this equality in communication among members and this average social sensitivity of the members, right? So quality communication is critical. In many cases, much more critical than any of those other things, any of those structural features. So, that begs the question, were the elements of psychological safety evident in our team? So, to get at this, I conducted a very unscientific poll of the project PDs and the grad students and our postdoc using SurveyMonkey, and I came up with this great idea to do this on Friday. So if I'd had my act together, I'd have done it much earlier. Consequently, we've got 13 respondents that we're looking at here. We actually had pretty nice equal representation among the PDs and the grad student postdoc categories. So the first question asked, how many collaborative projects have you been involved in? And the majority of our team members have been involved in more than at least two, if not many more, collaborative projects. So they have this experience of collaborative projects to think about when answering the rest of these questions, right? So then I asked, thinking about all of your experiences with collaborative projects, including this PZM team, how would you rank your experience in our PZM team? And you can see that The majority, the overwhelming majority of respondents ranked this PZM team as being their most professionally satisfying team. Right? They enjoyed being part of the team, either the most satisfying or at least the second most satisfying. And then I asked them to rate on a scale of 1 to 5 how much they agree with the statement the PZM team has strong leadership. So you can see we had strong leadership, right? That seemed to be the most common opinion. The PZM team was well organized. Apparently we were relatively well organized. Right, so I think these measure kind of these structural features of the PZM team, right? So the responses indicate that the structural features were strong and that participants enjoyed being part of the team. So what about this psychological safety? So to try to get at this idea of psychological safety, I asked a couple more questions. So on a scale of 1 to 5, I felt that my ideas and opinions were valued by the PZM team. And you can see, overwhelmingly, they strongly agreed. I felt safe to share my opinions and ideas with the rest of the team. And again, every very strong support for that statement. All team members had equal opportunity to contribute to team meetings and project discussions if they so desired. And again, relatively strong support for that statement. So, you know, the participant responses here suggest that, yeah, the team cultivated an environment that was safe for interpersonal risk-taking, this idea of psychological safety. And I think we were effective at cultivating an environment of psychological safety within our team. So I think to capitalize on synergy, you obviously need interesting and important science, and I think we had that. You obviously need quality personnel, right, with some set of skills. Leadership, we had strong leadership. Commitment, we had strong commitment, right? Those are critical. These are your structural features, I would argue, right? These are the structural features that most grant agencies want teams to demonstrate in their proposals, that you can pull that off, right? But I think even more critical, perhaps, at least based on the literature, you also need quality communication that provides a safe space for interpersonal risk-taking, this idea of psychological safety. And I think that's where you're going to find this synergistic nexus, right, where you maximize the collective IQ of the team. And we don't actually ask that or require that in our proposals to funders. So in terms of kind of putting this in context, thinking about where this might go forward in the future, perhaps we should be thinking about requiring synergy models. A lot of proposals require logic models. Maybe we should be thinking about synergy models too. A plan for fostering quality communication among participants to ensure an effective team. So that, I think that would be a pretty interesting thing to think about, and maybe if granting agencies don't necessarily require them, at least we should be thinking about, you know, if we're going to be involved in these large coordinated agricultural projects or any project, how are we going to foster quality communication with our team? How are we going to do that explicitly? Because I think it's really important. So that's all I got. Thanks.
to our limited grant budget do, but it's less than a $10 million grant, do we put into doing that? But I think you're right. That's what really builds good teams, is that face-to-face discussion and relationship building. But that costs money when you're pulling people together from all over the country. So, you know, there's that. And then how much, just a more specific question, how much of your budget was dedicated to getting those people to that site that you didn't need?
Yeah.
Not specifically, but just...
Yeah, yeah. Adam or Nick, maybe you can speak to kind of initial thoughts about when the proposal was being developed, what were the thoughts on budgeting for the annual meetings?
So the various sites had their budgets being managed, but we did think that
yes.
So I think the conference calls gave us a second common time to air our thoughts and concerns. And then another layer that Rich talked about, use of face account. For me, when I started using it 7 years ago, it was really liberating because one of the things that takes up my time is PI.
They were well attended, yeah.